broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, our number 877-876-PHIL, and welcome to the only talk show in the world that knows what it's talking about. This is where truth is our bitch, and we go anywhere to take you places other talk shows can't take you, and we do. And if you don't believe us, you can ask them. Not that they'll tell you the truth. All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number. Welcome on this Tuesday night, and a bunch of stuff to talk about. I had a bit of an argument before we went on the air with Dr. Ron Tarner, who is our first guest. And, Bud, you probably heard that, as he was going on and on and on and on and on and on and on about Steve Jobs. I don't even know how to pronounce the guy's name. You know,
it's Steve Jobs.
All right, Steve Jobs. I mean, he's what? It's Jobs. Okay, all through show prep, everybody was saying Jobs.
No, when they were saying Jobs, you didn't hear about it.
Well, anyway, that's my whole point, though. As much as I admire what the man's achieved, Steve Jobs and the world that he inhabits and the world that he informs and the people that admire him, it's a small world. I'm not saying that people don't use Mac products. That's different. But people who are aware of Steve Jobs' role in that world are few in comparison. And the only real passion there is for Steve Jobs is among Mac geeks, iPhone dorks, and, you know.
I don't think that's fair. I don't know who he is. I'd like to know more about him, though.
Well, you'd like to know more about him now that he's resigning, huh?
Yeah, what's that about?
I'm just saying, I'd like to know more.
All right, well, you'd like to know more, but the point that I'm making here is, well, I tell you what we'll do is we will wait. We'll get Ron Tarner on the line here, but Dr. Ron Tarner will be with us. We also have Vernon Dozier talking about earthquake preparedness, and we'll have David G. Hall to talk with us about Phil TV and HD and some of the things that that he'd like to suggest. Can we put Dr. Tarner on hold, please?
Yeah, he's waiting, though.
Yeah, you can put him on hold, man. I can hear the hiss coming down the line. Anyway, so we'll talk to David G. Hall about certain things relative to Phil TV and HD that he would like to see done. Now, our affiliate spotlight tonight is on WWRL in New York and KAOI in Maui, KAOI Maui, Hawaii. And, of course, our website is www.philhendryshow.com. That's www.philhendryshow.com. And don't forget, when you go to our website, you can get Phil TV and HD, all of our archives. It is a backstage pass that is worthy of the name. You find out how we do the show. And if you're watching us in HD tonight, you see some pretty amazing things. Not all of them good, I might add.
Tell people to do the movie.
I just want to let everybody know that we have an early call on Friday morning. Whether or not we will be live tomorrow night, I don't know, because we're shooting our scene for Judd's movie.
Judd, that one is? You're on first-name basis on that, Judd?
Yeah, that's the way it's going to be now until... Get out of here, both of you guys, okay?
Yeah, tell people about it.
I'm not telling anybody anything. I'm just going to be... I'm not working tomorrow night, as far as I know, because we've got an early call, and that's just where that's at. Thank you. God. 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Tarner, how are you tonight?
Well, I think I'm doing a little bit better than you right now. I'm at home with my son, and we're enjoying just catching up on the day. But I'm hearing your crew giving you a hard time. Congratulations, and let us know what movie that's going to be.
Well, it's just a scene. It's just a, you know, I'm not a headlining actor. I have a radio show I have to do. It's very difficult, you know, to get out and...
You know, quit bullcrapping, man. You
shut up and get out of here.
Is that the I guess he's a developmentally disabled is what I want to say.
You can't. I'm developmentally... He don't even know how to say it.
I said it right. Developmentally disabled.
No, he's not. He's not developmentally disabled. Bud was in a motorcycle accident. That's why he talks the way he does, but he's got no IQ loss at all. Quit playing on that, Bud. All right, and don't say anything. This is not a two-man or a three-man show. Do you guys understand that? Hold on for a minute. Ron, will you hold on?
Well, all right, Phil, but I was just...
You understand what I'm saying?
What?
I'm telling you and you, Robert, This is not a three-man show where you just jump in whenever you want. You understand?
I know, but I mean, I was only...
I'm telling you guys, you don't jump in whenever you want. You jump in if I ask you a question. If I'm doing something, bud, and all of a sudden you got a thought that pops into your head and you start talking, you're off mic. I can't hear you. Nobody can hear you. And I'm not interested in what you got to say. This is the Phil Hendry Show. What does that mean?
It's Phil Hendry.
Right. It's not the Phil Hendry and Bud Dickman Show, and it ain't the Phil Hendry and Robert Leonard Show. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
I didn't do anything. I was just telling him about that.
Telling him about what, man? I was talking about Dr. Tarner, and you guys are jumping in. No more. Understand? No more. You know what I'm going to start to do? I'm going to start, because you just started getting paid, didn't you, bud?
Yeah, not much.
Oh, really? Not much? I'm going to start docking you. I'm going to start fining you guys, like they do in sports.
Oh, come on, man. That's not even legal.
Oh, it's not legal? It's legal around here, it is. I'm going to start to fine you. I'm going to start slapping fines on you guys every time you open your big fat traps, and I don't want you to. You understand that?
It's a jip.
You look like you're ready for the first fine, huh?
I'm just saying it's a jip.
It ain't a jip. What's a jip is I got to stop down and talk to you guys about this stuff. I beg your pardon, ladies and gentlemen. Ron, forgive me.
That's quite all right. I understand.
All right, Ron, what we were talking about before we went on the air, and I was talking about this to Bud and to Robert, was Steve Jobs stepping down as the head of Apple. His insistent vision that he knew what consumers wanted made Apple one of the world's most valuable and influential companies. Stepping down as chief executive, the company announced late Wednesday. Mr. Jobs said in a letter released by the company, "I have always said that if there ever came a day when I could no longer meet my duties and expectations as Apple's CEO, I would be the first to let you know. Unfortunately, that day has come." This is a man, I understand, who's very significant in the world of computers, in the world of, I don't want to say the personal computer, but revolutionizing the use of computers personally.
Well, you know, Phil, you just said personal computer, and I think that that's not fair. It was the Mac. It was not a PC. It was the Mac that Steve Jobs and the others at Apple, Steve Wozniak, developed, and it became the superior personal use computer. But beyond that, there were even more heights to which Steve Jobs took the experience of using a computer. The operating system was far superior to a personal computer. It didn't even compare. I don't know where to begin in telling you the significance of Steve Jobs leaving Apple. And
oh, hold on for a second. What did you say about?
Wait a minute, Phil.
What? Bud's talking to me.
Wait a minute, Phil. Hold on. Yeah, I want to say something to you.
Yeah.
Now I waited patiently while you talked to that man and the other one, and I want to say what I want to say.
Bud Dickman was handing me a note.
I don't care whether Bud Dickman's handing you a note. Now I want to say what I want to say. Steve Jobs resigned. This is one of the most significant events since the, in my opinion, since the announcement that the Apple computer was going to be sold back in the early 1980s. And I don't want to sit here on hold and listen to you and your staff argue, if you don't mind.
Well, I'm sorry, Ron, but I'm going to have to. What is this?
Oh, boy, you don't even care. You know what?
Now he hung up. What do you want? What is this? We're out of beer.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Should I go get some?
Yeah, get some. Go with him, will you?
All right.
That's the big note, huh?
Yeah.
We're out of beer, and I just had the guy hang up on me. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-7445. We'll get back here with Dr. Ron Tarner and the significance of the resignation of Steve Jobs in a moment on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Later on, Vernon Dozier and David G. Hall.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL.
Fine, fine.
That's 877-876-7445.
You get the beer?
Beer.
Yes, I do like Pabst Blue Ribbon. I don't care who knows it. Put it in the refrigerator. 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Ron Tarner has rejoined us. I apologize, Dr. Tarner, and I will not take time away from the business at hand.
Well, I apologize for hanging up, Phil, but this is a very big day. Steve Jobs developed the Mac computer, which is far superior to the PC, and the fact that the PC still is in existence, I have to tell you, Phil, is a testament not to so much to how inferior the Mac may be. The Mac is a superior piece of equipment. The fact that the PC still exists is a testament to how uninformed the consumer is.
So the people that own PCs, and I've had them, you know, Hewlett-Packard and...
Oh, my God.
I know. I told you about the 17-inch...
oh, my God. You had an HP.
Yes, I did.
That is the single worst laptop and perhaps the single worst computer in the history of the world.
And oh, come on. It's a company...
No, I'm not exaggerating. The Hewlett-Packard is perhaps the worst. And the fact that you brought up Hewlett-Packard, well, we're talking about a man named Steve Jobs who developed a product... and along with Steve Wozniak, developed a company that has given people a superior machine in terms of personal computing, the Mac, the MacBook, the iPad. Then, of course, we have the iPhone, and we have the tablet.
What is the tablet?
Or I don't know what the tablet is. I think that's a PC. But if it's a Mac product, then it's superior.
The tablet is like isn't that like an iPad or an iBook?
The iBook, that's what I was thinking of. The iBook and the iPad and the iPhone and the rest. The fact that there's such a thing as a personal computer.
Let me interrupt you here for just a minute, Ron. How much does the average person know about Steve Jobs, and how much does the average person care about Steve Jobs?
Well, I got to tell you something, Phil. They better care about Steve Jobs because he is, you know, I have to tell you something. Listening to you and your staff, and I don't know who's not taking this seriously, but it does grate on me a little bit. I think, you know, in class today, and I'm going to do it again tomorrow, when I brought this up and I saw my students sitting and looking at me as if they wished they were anywhere but that lecture hall. And that hurt me, and I'll tell you why. I was talking about the resignation of one of the great entrepreneurs and inventors of our time, Steve Jobs, and I had people looking back at me, my students, none of whom, by the way, will ever be another Steve Jobs. None of whom.
Well, you shouldn't never say never, huh?
No. I could look right into the dead eyes of my students, and I say that with great respect because I love my kids, but when I am talking about a Steve Jobs, and then I look at my students, their eyes become dead because the difference is enormous. And the eyes of today's students in America, when it comes to comparing them to Steve Jobs, you're looking into the eyes of a dead thing.
Well, it sounds like there's a little bit of overkill here. There's a little bit of anger that Steve Jobs is resigning.
No, you don't need to psychoanalyze me, Phil.
No, but when you say that Steve Jobs, comparing the students of America to Steve Jobs, it's like looking into the eyes of a dead thing. It, to me, sounds like you're a little bit angry at your students. And
well, you know what? There is something to that.
Okay. I give to you. I appreciate your honesty. You know.
No, there is something to that. There is. I am angry at my students because when I look at my students, I know there's not going to be another Steve Jobs in that group. I know that when I look into, and again, I have to emphasize, the deadness of their eyes. And
are you saying that your students have dead eyes, or are you saying compared to a Steve Jobs and what he was able, the life that he brings?
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, no, they're young people, they're alive, they're full of life, they're full of dreams, but they, yes. If I were to look at Steve Jobs and then look at my students, the comparison would be between a living man and a corpse.
And okay, this is the kind of extreme comparison.
No, it's not an Phil, I am telling you, when I look at my students and I look at Steve Jobs, I see a living man, and then I look back at my students, and I see a corpse, the eyes of a carcass. And if you've ever seen these carcass dogs that they have at the police department...
You're talking about a cadaver dog.
I'm sorry, cadaver dog. What did I say?
Carcass.
I apologize. What I meant is like looking at a cadaver, and looking at a cadaver, you worry, where are our entrepreneurs coming from? And so that's why I took the unprecedented step.
All right, I want to talk about you taking the personal computers from your students. They don't belong to you.
Let's not talk, Phil, about absolutes, okay?
Well, you went down the aisles of the different desks in the lecture hall and you took personal computers away from students. Are you going to return those?
The point that I was making, if you allow me.
Go ahead.
The point that I was making is that compared to the Mac, there are no computers. And I was personally offended. I was personally offended that students would have PCs and would not have the Mac, would not have the iPad, would not have the iBook, would not have the iPod, the iPhone, the iTablets and everything that Steve Jobs and Apple has put out, the iKeyboards, and I was very offended, and that's why I went and I took those computers.
All right, you were offended because they didn't have the good taste or the good sense to buy a Mac?
That is exactly right.
All right, what are you going to do with those?
I took them home, and it is my intention of putting them on eBay and selling them, and the money that we are able to make, use for the purchasing of equipment in our classroom.
And so are you going to recompense your students? Are you going to pay back your students the money that you would owe them for taking these personal computers?
I don't know at this particular point, because as a teacher, you are allowed, Phil, to exercise a level of control in your classroom that obviously it has to be legal, but it does, in the eyes of the law, and certainly in the eyes of parents, although these are college students, it is equal to that of, I often use the comparison of a captain of an airplane or a ship at sea. You become almost the absolute in law.
And so you're saying to me that you can take someone's computer from their desk, you can confiscate that, and you don't have to give them reparation, you don't have to pay them back for that?
Not necessarily, no.
And you can sell that computer on eBay?
That is correct, yes.
Which is what you're planning on doing.
I don't know yet. What I have now is I confiscated about 14 PCs from students that sat there and had the gall and had the unmitigated gall to sit there with a PC while I was talking about Steve Jobs. And I even said to one of the young ladies, Vogel, young Miss Vogel, I said, I don't want to give you her first name, but I said, Miss Vogel, you realize I'm talking about Steve Jobs? And she said, yes, Professor. I said, and you have a personal computer open, and you're doodling, or you're on MySpace, or you're on your MySpace. And she said, "No, I am not. I'm taking notes." I said, "Well, you're a liar," because I pulled it around, and she had moved it over at the last second to her notepad. She had it on MySpace.
And
Wait, hold on for a minute. I'm not done yet.
No, I gotta find out. Number one, you took her computer.
It was her PC. I took that.
All right, you took her computer. She wasn't on MySpace. She was taking notes.
No, she was on MySpace. I saw her on MySpace. And
when you pulled the computer around, she had her notes.
When I pulled it around, I said, "Miss Vogel," and I reached out. I said, "What do you think you're doing?" I said, "You're on MySpace trying to pick up men or whatever." And I pushed it, and there were her notes. And I said, "You know what you did, and I know what you did." And she looked stunned. I truly believe she knows. She knows.
So did you take that computer?
I took her computer. I took Terry Pond's computer. I took Jeremy Borvac's computer. I took all the PCs from these kids that were on Facebook. And then when I went there, yeah, and all of a sudden they have a notepad. I'm not buying it.
All right, we'll be back with Dr. Ron Tarner, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445.
Bullcrap.
Phil Hendry.
It's live.
Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. With me is Ron Tarner, Dr. Ron Tarner from the University of Denver. And he also, of course, is an astronomer at Cloverdale Observatory in Cloverdale, Colorado. We're talking, though, about the resignation of Steve Jobs as the CEO of Apple. And I'm reading here, Ron, from the New York Times. Rarely has a major company and industry been so dominated by a single individual and so successful. His influence has gone far beyond the iconic personal computer, computers that were Apple's principal product for its first 20 years. In the last decade, Apple has redefined the music business through the iPod, the cell phone through the iPhone, and media through the iPad. Now, that is some pretty significant praise.
It doesn't even go close. In a lot of ways, that's the New York Times being lazy, which they are. We know the New York Times has gotten lazy. We know what the New York Times has come to represent over the last many years, and that is a standard of journalism that is so sloppy and so lazy and so off point that I feel angered and I feel outraged by that.
And but it isn't that high praise.
No, it's not. It's not accurate. It doesn't come close to what Steve Jobs has been to the culture and to the world, really, over the last 100 years. Steve Jobs has brought to the American people and to the people of the world. And I'm not a religious man, and I don't mean to offend anyone, but think of it in these terms. What did Jesus Christ bring to the average person?
Jesus Christ brought salvation.
I understand that's your religion, Phil, but I appreciate that. But seriously, what did he bring?
I'm being very serious. Jesus Christ brought the promise of eternal life.
Boy, this is going to be tough.
Well, what are you asking me?
Can we get it off of the supernatural for a moment? And
well, you're asking me what was the one thing that he brought to the human race?
Well, what was other than that? What was the biggest thing he brought to the human race? The Bible. The Bible, isn't it?
I would not say that Jesus was a part of the Bible. His story is the New Testament of the Bible, as Christians believe it to be. So it is a continuation of the Bible story.
Well, but no one would have known the Bible from Mad Magazine if it hadn't been Jesus. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Jewish people would know they would know their Torah, which is the what we call in Christianity the Old Testament.
Oh, boy.
Well, you're asking me a question.
I'm saying to you, all right, well, here's the answer to the question, and I just formed it. Christianity, didn't they bring Christianity to the world?
Yes, I will give you that.
All right, that's what I'm saying. Jesus brought Christianity to the world. And all of the other things I don't disrespect, and I know that you believe them, and I appreciate that, Bill. But let's say that Jesus brought Christianity to the world. Steve Jobs has one-upped Jesus.
And he's one-upped Jesus in the Christianity department.
In the department of philosophies, in the department of lifestyle, in the department of personal codes of ethics, yes, Steve Jobs has gone Jesus one better. Because with the development of the Mac, not the PC, the Mac, and the...
Hold on, what, bud?
You mean the back.
Are you saying the back?
Am I saying the what?
The back.
No, I said back.
You got a stuffed up nose.
Is your nose stuffed up?
Is that producer I hear in the background?
He thought that you said back because your nose is stuffed up.
My nose is not stuffed up. My nose is my nose. I don't... Phil?
All right, he's saying back, bud.
I'm saying back, bud. Is your name Bud or Bud?
My name's Bud. Why?
Well, it's going to be Mud. Okay?
All right. I understand, Dr. Turner. Continue, please.
What a pain in the... So, what I'm saying here...
You're saying that Steve Jobs with the personal computer...
No, not the personal computer. God! It's not the personal computer.
I'm sorry, the Mac. Okay, the Mac. But it is a personal computer. You heard me just read that.
That's the New York Times. That's not the PC that Steve Jobs developed. It's the Mac. It's not a PC. It's a Mac. Do you understand?
Yes.
Steve Jobs, by developing the Mac, developed a piece of technology, a machine, that is more important to the human being than the personal philosophy of Christianity. That's what I'm saying.
Wouldn't you have to talk to someone, and a Mac user, and ask them if that's true?
I don't. What are you talking about? I've seen people staying home from church to fool around on a Mac instead. Now, what do you call that?
All right, hold. Do you have Father? I want you to talk to a Christian. I've got Father James McQuarters on the line. All right, and the reason why I've got Father McQuarters is he's a Catholic priest. Father McQuarters.
Yes, no, this is Father McQuarters, and I've been listening with great...
How are you, Father? This is Rod Tarter.
Say that again.
This is Dr. Professor Rod Tarter.
Professor, this is Father James McQuarters of Del Mar Academy. I'm a diocesan priest in Los Angeles County.
Yes, Father.
I've been listening on this broadcast on the Phil Henry Show. I've heard you say that the back of the high back of the MacBook is more important than Jesus.
I didn't say it well, yeah.
No, you said that...
Said Steve Jobs.
You said Steve Jobs is more important than Jesus Christ. Did you say that?
I'm sorry to say... What did you say?
I said I heard you say... And I'm trying to speak as loud as I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Father.
We can hear you, Father.
Right. Because I don't want there to be any mistake. Did you say that the MacBook or the iMac or whatever you want to call this... These computers, the computing machines that the Steve Jobs developed, did you say that he's more important than Jesus?
Did I say he's more important than Jesus? Daisy?
Call him Daisy. I said Jesus!
All right. Whoa, Father. Come on.
Well, I'm listening to this ass talking about, was his name Daisy Christ or is it Jesus Christ?
His name was Jesus Christ, Father. I apologize. I didn't hear you.
And don't call him Daisy! And I've been listening, and I've been keeping a lid on my temper. I'm an Irishman, you know.
I understand, Father.
Well, okay, you're an Irishman, but, you know, I'm Rod Tarter, and I never heard of you. Well, you know why you've never heard of me? That's a very interesting thing. Because Stephen Hawking stole all my thunder, and guys like you, with your turned-around collars, probably spent a lot of...
Whoa. What you mean, the turned-around collar? I'm a diocesan priest... I went to the St. John's Seminary. I took my post-education, my master's degree at Georgetown University. I'm a Catholic priest, educated by the Jesuits, and I don't need
I'm saying you got that. You guys hang around someone in a hoveround like that, Stephen Hawking, and all you do all day long is bless a guy like that. I mean, that guy was born with a gold crucifix right up his you-know-what, and you know what I mean.
Well, Stephen Hawking is a good man and has had to put up with a great many things, a great many pains in his life, in order to achieve the things he's achieved. And you, what have you done? I've listened to you run the name of Jesus Christ into the ground, saying that the greatest of all, the Son of God, he who came, who was above all men, who came and saved the soul of man, so that we could be redeemed for eternal life in heaven with our Father. And you, talking about your MacBook, and talking about your iPad, and your iPhone, and your i-this, your i-that. You notice, Bill, everything in the Mac generation is me. Isn't it? Isn't that what it is?
Father, I think that's a very simplistic way of looking at things.
No, you know something, Father? That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
That's right. Everything about the Mac and about this Stephen Jobs is about empowering the individual. That's fine, we can empower the individual. I'm sure we can empower the individual until the cows come home. But it's always been about empowering the individual. But try to get the individual to empower his fellow man. Try to get the individual to reach out and do something for his fellow man. Well, that's a little bit too much. because he's got his iPhone and his iBook and his iMac. That's what I say now, you know.
Oh, that's real funny.
I'm not trying to be funny.
But you're not. You're succeeding.
I thought that was funny, Father.
Thank you. What I say is your iPhone and your iMac and your iBook and your You know?
Write that down, will you, Staley? Right. Oh, get a load of this. He's writing jokes.
I'm not writing jokes. I'm not writing jokes the way you write jokes, because you're jealous of a poor man crippled up like a human pretzel in a home around. Dr. Stephen Hawking.
And you guys hang around him with your twisted around collar, blessing him all the time. Meanwhile, he's
I don't have a twisted around collar. God almighty, that's what I wouldn't give.
All right, let's calm this down. It's getting a little heated. I'm sure you would agree. Dr. Tarner, you made some comments. You've got Father McQuarters a little upset, talking about Christianity. And
well, yeah, that's just it. I was talking about Christianity, not Catholicism. So I don't know why he's upset.
The Catholic people are Christians, too, you idiotic. Oh, what an ignorant ass.
Oh, boy. You know, I'll tell you what. This show tonight has been worth it for me to come on the air and be called an ass by a Catholic priest. I would think you guys would have a few other things to worry about besides whether or not Steve Jobs resigned.
And no one cares about Steve Jobs resigning. But I'll tell you this. Stephen Jobs is a good man, and he's a smart man, and he invented and he developed a great many things that benefit the human race. There's no question about that. But for you to say that he's above Jesus Christ.
And no, I did. I said he's above Christianity.
And Jesus Christ is the body of Christ. Is Christianity the body of Christ? Is his church? Don't you understand, don't you know?
Okay, we're getting into some liturgical things, and...
What did you say?
He said liturgical, you dumbass.
So you said turd.
No, I didn't say turd. I said liturgical, which has to do,
Yeah, right, with all that.
Exactly. Hang on the line here for just a moment. Our number 877, this is very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, Father McQuarters calling in and everything. I knew he'd be pretty good. That's why I contacted him at the bowling alley.
What bowling alley?
He's all down the bowling alley. You don't want to go down Orange Lane?
I didn't know he goes to the Orange Lanes. Where are those?
Down Orange.
All right, we'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with Father James McQuarters and Ron Tarter in just a moment. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Steve Jobs, was he more important ultimately? Did he transcend ultimately Christianity? I think he's saying that just to get a reaction, you know?
I don't know, man. A guy like that, he's nothing but a four-eyed.
Well, he is a four-eyed geek, that's for sure. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
What would I wouldn't give?
To call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. As we talk about Steve Jobs, our last segment here, we have Dr. Ron Tarner from the Mountain Meadow Observatory. It's actually at the University of Denver right now, doctor?
Yes, I'm at the University now. I'm here generally during the week, and then I head home. My son and I, we split time between our home in Overdale and Denver.
And also with me is Father James McQuarters, who called in because you took notice of the comment. And if you'll allow me, Dr. Tarner, or Professor Tarner.
You keep correcting yourself. I am not a doctor. I'm a professor. But I've never minded being called doctor because if you look at the amount of schooling that I've put in. And
I understand. Can we got to get going.
You've got to get going.
That's right. You heard him.
Excuse me, Father. I'm not talking to you. You got to get going. I was saying something about me. Okay?
All right. Go ahead.
I was saying that the amount of schooling that I've put in... Never mind.
Look what a baby.
No, I'm not a baby. I'm not a baby. I wanted to say that I don't mind being called doctor, and who's going to know the difference?
It's like Bill calling himself a priest. He's not a priest. He's not a Catholic priest. He's a talk radio personality.
And why would he want to call himself a priest? Everybody thinking he's got his hand down a little kid's shorts.
Why, you filthy bastard. You know,
and listen to the language from a priest.
You know something?
Whoa, hold on for just a minute. That was unnecessary, Dr. Turner. I mean,
No. Dr. Tarter's fine.
No.
Yeah, Dr. Tarter's fine because you want to be an imposter, don't you? You want to impose upon people a phony personality persona. That's what you do, don't you? A phony personality persona.
Oh, will you stop? You know what? I think you got a split there you're going to have to pick up, so...
Why don't you mind your own business?
Well, you're with the guy that's bowling right now, Father. Okay?
I called this program tonight because I was on my way over to the Orange Bowl. And every on Wednesday night, as you know, we have our league. And Delmar has a league. And I heard this man say that he felt that Steve Jobs was transcended or somehow was better than Christianity. And that is a heresy. That is blasphemy. I've got to call up and I've got to set this... the record straight. And that's what I did.
All right, you set the record straight. Anything else?
Oh, you are. You're a real smart ass, aren't you? You know, as the kids, a lot of the Mexican kids that I work with, a lot of the young Mexicans I work with in the barrio would say,
that's a good fight.
You know what I'm saying?
Look at him making fun of the Mexicans.
I don't think he's doing that.
I'm not making fun of them. I'm making fun of you. I tell you something. If I was 20 years younger and I lived in Denver, boy, would things be different for you tonight.
Well, what, I don't understand what that means. Would I be wearing a girdle or...
Probably.
Oh, boy, I walked into that, didn't I? What I meant to say...
No, I gotcha.
What I meant to say...
All right, come on, will you? So, Father McQuarters, thank you. Are you done?
What do you mean, am I done? I want to... Yes, I'm done, okay? I'm done. But that... Yeah, butt in the bottom. Butt in the bottom. And if you wouldn't...
All right, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. With me is... Dr. Ron Turner, you cannot blame him for being upset.
Yes, I can't blame him for calling up and assaulting me. I was called an ass.
You talked about priests and molesting. The father was calling up to simply say and to speak up on behalf of his philosophy, his personal faith, that Christianity was not trumped by Steve Jobs.
Well, Phil, I guess it would take a Catholic priest to call up and argue that point, because I don't think anybody else could. I will give the father this. He has the education, and he talks a good game, and, you know, he's a formidable man. And so to have to deal with him is difficult. But let me just say that by him calling it, I think the average person knows that what I'm saying is true, and it took a Catholic priest with the education of a doctor,
Father McQuarters.
What's that?
Father McQuarters.
Of a Father McQuarters. It took the education of a Father McQuarters to make the case. But I don't think he's made the case. I believe that Steve Jobs is as significant a man as has lived in many hundreds of years. I think he's as significant as Gutenberg. I think he is as significant as Columbus. I think he is significant in his own way and in his own time and in his own right and in his own method and in his own particular and peculiar...
All right, I understand. In his own way...
In his own way, he is as significant as Albert Einstein. And that people don't see that, that's what bothers me. And it bothers me... It bothers me a lot.
All right, Bud, you had a question?
Yeah, Professor Turner, my name's Bud Dickman.
Yeah.
Do you mind being called Four Eyes?
What are you doing?
What's he trying to pull?
Get out of here, Bud.
No, you said I could see it.
Get out of here, Bud. Robert?
Yeah, Professor Turner, I like my Mac. I have an iPod, an iPad, and I got an
iPhone?
Yeah, I got an iPhone.
I have an iPhone.
That's great.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Well, that's the only thing you own that's a Mac, and you rave about it, and yet you won't go and buy yourself a Mac computer or an iPad. So, I don't know, there's something wrong with you.
Well, I want to say, Dr. Turner.
Go ahead.
Do you think I should get an iPhone, the 5 instead of 4?
Well, you definitely get the 5, because the 5 is going to, it's an upgrade, and there's going to be a lot of things available to you in terms of apps. So I would definitely get the 5.
All right, thank you very much.
Now, you're welcome, sir. I'm getting the feeling that no one's calling.
You're right.
You didn't even want want to lie and tell me there were a lot of people calling, did you?
No, I've got to tell you the truth. No one cares about you and Steven Jobs. People care about Steven Jobs in that he was a significant person. And
No, don't lie to me. Don't try to make it better.
And I'm not, but no, I'm giving it to you straight. People care that Steve Jobs was a significant person in that, in the technological world, but he's not, it's not a passionate thing for people that this guy stepped down as a CEO.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sorry, you know.
No, all right, all right.
You know what? I would love it just once for people to say goodbye before they hang up on this show, you know?
I don't know. You think he sounds like he's going
to
cry.
That sounds like to me.
Well, I don't know what he's bawling about. Let me tell you something. Steve Jobs is a significant person, just as Professor Tarner said, but we're right. It ain't no big thing at the end of the day. He moves down, somebody else moves in. It's what it is. We'll be back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Vernon Dozier coming up, and David G. Hall as well.
Phil Hendry.
Okay, whatever.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch. And we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. Thank you for being with us. Our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. David G. Hall has some issues. He is our vice president of syndication. We're going to have him up later on in the program. We have Vernon Dozier, a Belmar Academy teacher. He is the head football coach there. He is a member of their board. He's also a very good friend of Father James McQuarters. Father McQuarters has the parish there at Belmar. And we're going to talk with him about yesterday's earthquake in Virginia. 877-8, I shouldn't say Virginia. I know it's scared a lot of people, and my heart and my best wishes are with you guys, because I know how scary those are. The first earthquake that I ever lived through, I was telling you, Bud, was the and Robert, was the Sylmar quake.
Yeah, you said, you don't tell people about the Sylmar quake, you ran nude.
Yeah.
I didn't run nude, okay?
You said you went out nude.
I did not. Every time I tell you guys something, you get it wrong, okay?
What would you said?
I said I went outside in my underwear. Is that nude?
Well, yeah, you're wearing, were they bun? Did they hug a bun?
Did they hug a bun? What is it with that brain damage of yours, man?
I meant the bun hug.
Bun huggers, okay? No, they were hangers, what we used to call hangers.
What's that?
Boxer shorts.
But you call them hangers.
Because they, you know how kids today pull their pants down so you see their underwear?
Yeah.
Back when I was a kid, we had our underwear hang out from underneath our swimsuits, our shorts. So we called them hangers. So you put on your shorts or you put on your swimming suit, and your hangers would hang so you had your underwear. It's like the opposite of today.
What?
It's, I don't know. Don't ask me. That's what we did. All right, so anyway, yeah, I ran outside. I was in my underwear. It was the 71 Sylmar quake. It was in February of 71. I'll never forget. I was going to PCC at the time, Pasadena City College, and the thing that I distinctly remember, of course, running outside was the wrong thing to do, but I didn't know. I thought it was... they were working on the street, or they were doing some jackhammering or something. I had no idea what it was. Then I realized it was an earthquake. It was a 6.6, Jason? The Sylmar? No. Are you kidding? I just don't remember it as being that strong. I remember, I do know that we had a loss of life. The Veterans Administration Hospital, which I think was in the valley, I can't remember where, part of it collapsed, killing some of the men at the VA hospital, right? And I remember, the thing that I remember the most is going outside, there I am in my underwear, and I'm staring at the moon. I don't know why, but I looked up, it was a full moon. It was 6 o'clock in the morning, so it was getting light out. And the other thing that I remember was hearing dogs barking, burglar alarms going off, and babies crying.
What was the babies was crying about what?
About the earthquake, man.
About the earthquake? What do you think they're crying about? I don't know. Maybe they were hungry. Maybe it was their feeding time.
No, I think maybe it was the earthquake. What were they crying? Yeah, so I heard dogs barking. The dogs are going crazy. And the burglar alarms were tripped by this thing up and down the street. So you could hear all these burglar alarms going. And babies. I could hear these one or two or three infants suddenly crying. And then it was over. But I'm telling you, L.A., this was the first earthquake in my adult years. I don't remember anything like that happening. And L.A. was awake. Everybody was awake, you know. And thus began the preoccupation with the big one. That's where it all started. That's where the, oh, the big one. Well, they're going to get the big one. You know, the big one.
They ain't talking about John Holmes neither, is he?
Man, that wasn't even funny, man.
Yeah, it was.
No, it wasn't. And that's why I tell you to shut up. When I talk to you, then you can talk. When you ad-lib, you suck.
They ain't talking about John Holmes, did they?
They thought it was funny.
Anyway, so that began the preoccupation with what we call the big one, the big earthquake. And you remember the movie that came out? You guys are too young to remember. The movie came out, Earthquake, the most... I thought it was one of the funniest things I ever saw in my life. Forgive me for saying, but I did. Because the funniest part of the movie, in any of those disaster movies, if they suck, the funniest part of the movie is when some guy dies. And this guy had a cigarette, and it's in the movie, and he's got the cigarette. He's, oh, I forgot to turn the gas off. And he runs into the house, and then, you know, cut to the long shot. You know, the house just blows up. So anyway, that was that. All right, tonight, though, we have Vernon Dozier on the line with us. Vernon, do you remember the 71 quake?
Phil, I do indeed. I remember the 71 quake because I was also going to school at the time. I was at UCLA, and I was taking physical education. At that time, there was a head coach at UCLA by the name of Tommy Prothro. He was a head football coach, and I was fortunate enough to be a assistant with him, not on field assistant, but I was on staff for stats and for taking care of just odds and ends as a student staff member. So I remember that we were I was on the field, water in the field. It was 6 o'clock in the morning, and as you said, it was almost right at 6 o'clock. And I got up early that morning, I went over to school, and I started watering the practice field. And I remember because we were going to be starting spring football soon, and I remember someone running on the field and saying there was just an earthquake. I said, well, I thought that I was, and I know you said this, Phil, and I forgive me, but I said I thought I was hungover. Because I had spent...
I know. No, I've got a good story about that, too.
Because I had spent the night before over at the fraternity brother was going away. He was going transferring to another school, and we'd had a party for him. I literally thought I was hungover, and that's why I thought the ground was wobbling a bit, and that's when someone ran on the field and said, we just had an earthquake. And that's when I...
kind of put up your watering duties, huh?
That's about when I put the watering duties aside, and I... And I remember going to class that morning, and I think you said you went to class, too.
I went to class, and the first aftershock, everybody was so freaked out that the professor said, okay, just get out of here, go home, you know.
Yeah, same with me, same with us. We had, I had two biology, in fact, I had a biology pop quiz, or supposedly we were going to take a pop quiz, and I went in, I was well prepared, and they just let everybody go home that day.
Now, what about this Virginia earthquake that you that is significant for you? You said that you had been in contact with family back there.
Amber, my wife, has a brother who lives back there, and her family, most of her family is in the Alexandria, Virginia area, and so they were not in the center of the state, but they did obviously feel it because Alexandria is.
That's right next to D.C.
It is right next to D.C. So. You know, I got a call from her brother Ray, and he was anxious and wanted to know about earthquake kits, earthquake preparedness, and everything like that. I mean, we talked about the earthquake, and I told him what I knew. I said, well, you're probably going to have some aftershocks and so forth.
Were they okay?
Oh, yeah, they were fine. I think they had some things falling off the shelves. It was pretty significant. Because they were so close to the epicenter, you know.
Well, the thing that blows my mind is it was a 5.8, so it's not even as close as the Sylmar quakes being a 6.6. And, of course, the Northridge quake was off the chart. What was the Northridge quake?
The Northridge quake.
The Northridge quake.
The Northridge quake was 7, something like that.
Okay. So, anyway, the reason I'm saying is that 5.8, and yet they felt it up in New York, they felt it in Georgia, that's not... To my way of thinking, it's not a very powerful earthquake.
No, it's not. But if the epicenter of that thing is close to the surface of the Earth, if it's deep, and you get a 5/8, something like that, you may not feel it in as wide a radius. But if it's closer to the surface of the Earth, if the fault, where that fault line and where that plate shift occurs, you could get it. You could feel it.
Are you a geologist or?
No, I'm not a geologist. No, I'm just what I know. Things that I've, you know, I like to talk about earthquakes from personal experience. I'm not a geologist. But we're talking here, Phil, about the earthquake, and most Americans, 99.9% of Americans, don't know what we're talking about. They've never experienced one. And so I'm on your program talking about an earthquake, and I think I'm giving a credible description. I think I'm also sounding authoritative, and so when you say, oh, do you have a geology, I think it slows it down. I think we're, you know, I got people, I don't want to sound like a baby, but I had people thinking I knew what I was talking about, and it's a good feeling in my life, and maybe in yours. I don't get a lot of that kind of affirmation, so.
All right, I apologize. All right, look, now, let me just say this. The Northridge quake was a 6.9. The Sylmar quake was a 6.6. Jason, are you sure? The Northridge quake was a 6.9. The Sylmar quake in 1971 was a 6.6. A Snopes, okay, because I wouldn't trust Wikipedia, man. I wouldn't trust Wikipedia with Bud's eyes. But Snopes I do trust. So Snopes says a 6.6. Now, the quake in Virginia, your brother calls you, your brother-in-law.
My brother-in-law, yeah.
He calls you up, and what happens?
Well, he calls me up, and he says, boy, he wanted to talk, obviously, to Amber. He got on the line with his sister and my wife, and they talked. And then I got on the phone with him, and he was nervous, the family a little bit nervous. I understand that. I said, he said to me, they are, you know, suggesting that we put together earthquake preparedness kits, emergency kits, which is also very, very smart.
That is very smart. And anybody listening to us in Virginia, you should always have, if you're in an area where there's earthquakes, always have your earthquake preparedness kit, your earthquake emergency kit, which is water.
Well, it's before you get into that, I talked to Ray, and I told him to have things like, you know, masking tape. I told him to have things like razor blades. I told him that he needed to have a lot of coffee. I told him he needed a lot of paper towels. I told him that he needed 2 clocks.
Now, what is this that you're talking about?
I'm talking about the earthquake preparedness kit that I told him to put together.
And why? Why are you telling him these things?
Because, and this is the part of the story that I wanted to tell, but you wouldn't.
I want to hear, why are you telling your brother, is this an earthquake preparedness kit?
Yes.
That he's putting together?
Yes.
And you told him, what did you say to put in it?
I said, Phil, that I wanted him to get 2 clocks, masking tape, razor blades, paper towels, bathroom slippers, you know, shower cap. I told him a lot of nonsense, is what I'm saying, okay? And the reason why I told him a lot of nonsense is because right at that moment, when I was feeling sorry for him and his family in Virginia, and I felt bad that they'd gone through this quake, and I wanted them to have an earthquake preparedness kit, suddenly I was reminded of something that he did to me. And I'm sorry to have to put it this way, but that's what I did.
So you purposefully misled him?
Yes.
All right, hold on. I want to find out what it was that he did to you. I got to take a break. All right?
Well, I don't want it to seem like I'm being, I have my reasons.
I understand. Hold on. We're going to take a break with Fernand Dozier on the earthquake preparedness kit that he told his brother-in-law to put together back in Virginia and why he misled his brother-in-law on the same day that they had this 5.8 earthquake. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show and more information for you on earthquake preparedness, etc. 877-876-PHIL is the number. 877-876-PHIL is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. The
Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. On the line with me is Vernon Dozier, who is the head football coach, athletic director at Belmar Academy, as well as their math and science advisor for their senior and junior classes, and he's on the board there at Belmar Academy. And we're talking here about something in your personal life, Vernon, and that was the earthquake in Virginia. It was a 5.8, and that is not a big one comparatively speaking, but nonetheless, as we've so often said, when it's your first one.
Well, yeah, absolutely, Phil. When it's your first earthquake, you know, it doesn't make any difference, because I can tell you, my first earthquake, I don't know if it was Sylmar, it might have been a little bit earlier. They had a Long Beach quake about a year or so before that I seem to remember, but and there's no question it's a frightening experience, and I feel for my family. They are my in-laws, my wife's in-laws. But when this, you know, when Ray got on the phone and he said, "Can you help me put together an emergency earthquake kit?" I suddenly remembered what he had, said when I married his sister. She's quite a bit younger than me. And I married her the day after she graduated from high school. She had been one of my students.
And okay, yeah, now I remember. It's your wife, Amber, right?
That is correct, yeah. My wife, Amber. It's always been my wife. Well, I was married once before.
Well, your previous wife died, right?
That's correct, yes. Carolyn.
Okay.
So
I remember this. So you married this girl, and you had not been, and I'm just asking, you had not been, involved with her?
No. She turned 18 on the day she graduated. Okay.
Now, did you tell me that as soon as she walked off the stage, she walked right off the stage into your Volkswagen?
Into my Volkswagen Jetta. That's right. I had a Volkswagen Jetta. I was waiting. I had the engine running. She came right off the stage, went around the back of the car, threw her hat, threw that cap, that thing, I don't know what you call it, a mortarboard, threw that off into the back seat, got in. And we took off, and we got married that night.
Where did you get married?
Well, if I tell you where we got married, I don't want to make this a big thing. This is not about me and Amber, okay?
No, I know, but I'm just curious.
We got married in Las Vegas. Oh, okay, so what does that make me?
Nothing, I was curious. So you got married in Las Vegas, and then what?
And then we went to the Blue Moon Motel that I told you about. And her brother came by, not her brother, I think her father and her brother both drove by, and they got angry because at that time I didn't have the Jetta. Now I remember what I had. I had a 57 Chevy. It was a two-tone, and I had it jacked up in the back, okay? It had those big racing meets on it. You remember that car?
No, I never saw that, but you told me about it, yeah.
Okay. They got angry because they saw my Chevy parked with the rear end jacked up, parked at the Blue Moon Motel. And all the lights were off in the room and the car. And they just, for some reason, that bothered them. Because a half an hour before, they saw their sister graduating, their daughter and their sister graduating from high school. And now within 30 minutes, there's my car parked at the Blue Moon.
And they know that she's in there with you?
Yeah. All right. She was married to me. So.
All right. I mean, but, and you got this, and...
Big deal, you know, Phil. Just get over it.
Well, there's something about a guy's two-tone Chevy with the racing meets on the back, the ass end jacked up, parked in a motel, and you know in there is the guy and your sister. I don't know.
Well, I mean...
It's like a guy with a red baseball cap in a convertible. You know, just makes the guy just a target.
Well, I don't know what you mean by that.
I'm just saying, you know, it's a pretty... I don't know. I can't explain it. But where's my sister? Oh, there she... Oh, yeah, now I recognize there's Vernon's two-tone Chevy.
Let me tell you what, I was very proud of that car, okay? I had I put a 327 in that, and it was, at the time, it was one of the fastest cars in the Irwindale... I'll tell you, it was one of the fastest cars in the Irwindale-Colton quarry area, okay?
Well, that's... No, that's great.
Excuse me?
Oh, in the Irwindale-Colton quarry area.
There's a lot of badass Let me tell you something, my friend. There's a lot of badass boys over there. There's a lot of guys running some pretty hot machines over there. Oh, wow.
Well, you know something, man? It's not the same as saying I got the fastest ride in Southern California or I got the fastest... I had the fastest machine...
That's right, in the river. Go ahead, make fun of it. In the, let's say it together.
In the Irwindale?
Irwindale, Colton Quarry area.
Irwindale, Colton Quarry area.
That's right. You know, I didn't come on your program to be humiliated or laughed at or told that I was some sort of a turd in a punch bowl, in a punch bowl, because I happen to have a pretty quick ride, okay? And yes, it's a Chevy, okay? And I know you're going to say something about that.
Well, too bad it's not a Ford.
You got something to beat it? I don't understand. Why are you laughing?
We sound like a couple of kids.
It's a Chevy, okay? It's not a Ford. Have you got something to beat it?
You know I got my Jag.
Oh. I got 350 horse at the wheel.
I got 390.
You know something, Phil?
This is childish. We're not talking about cars, and we're not talking about street racing now. We're talking about the earthquake kit that you prepared for a brother... An earthquake kit that you gave him wrong information about, and I want to know why.
I just told you, because his brother, I didn't marry a man.
Her brother
was one of the prime antagonists when we got married. He made a big noise about how I was some kind of a pervert. He made a big noise.
All right, hold the line here. We'll be back with Vernon Dozier as we talk about Vernon's in-laws and the earthquake kit that they're putting together that he purposely misled them on because years ago they were against him marrying Amber, their daughter and sister. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, welcome back here, and with me, Vernon Dozier. So you see, we're talking a little bit about cars. You see what I have on the, I'll show my audience at home who's watching on Phil TV and HD. You see that Chevy?
Yeah, I see that Chevy. I'm not, that doesn't knock me out. I mean, I had, my 57 was... Let me put it to you this way, Phil. My 57 was a very classic. I had a soft top on it. That thing's got those outer space fins. I don't know who put that together, but I don't want to say, you know.
No, go ahead.
Really?
Well, okay. Are we going to get racial here?
No, I'm not going to get racial, but it looks like something that, you know, one of your, if you want to be, I'll be pulling one of our Hispanic friends probably, because they love to do that. They love to put those big-ass fins. That's not any kid. I mean, he customized that nice, you know.
All right, well, let's not talk about that, okay?
You're the one that led me into the racial thing.
It's not racial, but you're saying that Hispanic or Mexican-American car clubs, they tend to have a far more, a great flourish with the way they customize their cars, right?
Well, if you call that a flourish, I call it gaudy. That thing looks like something that landed from outer space. I wouldn't drive that. You think I'm going to have my wife? If I'm going to park in a motel, and I regret the night that I took her to a motel for our honeymoon, but at least I had my 57 parked out there and not something from Planet X.
All right. 877-876-PHIL. Talking here with Vernon Dozier about this earthquake kit. All right, so you've got her brother on the phone. You told him to put together an earthquake kit that had masking tape.
Yeah.
What was the stuff?
It was just a lot of stuff. I mentioned, I don't know where that list is. I said, he said, we are very afraid. We're very, very afraid. And that's when I should have, and I didn't. He said, my mother, which is Amber's mother, is upset. And the grandmother was very upset. I said, get a shower cap. I just started rolling off things that, man, I said, seat covers,
Seat covers?
Yeah, I mean, I said anything. And I was purposefully trying to ball him up and make screw it up. And here was my reason, Phil. Here was my reason. When I married his sister, he had some things to say about how I was a little bit exotic and different. And he thought there was something exotic about me.
And what does that mean, exotic?
In other words, he thought that I had a very exotic. I can't explain it.
Perverted?
No, not perverted. Not perverted.
Well, that you were robbing the cradle?
No, because he knew his sister was of age. She was 18. But I think that was part of it. I think he thought that I was slightly cradle robbing, even though she was 18. And she was 18. I didn't touch her until she was 18. And I didn't touch her until she graduated from high school.
Yeah, but the night she graduated from high school, you guys went directly to the Justice of the Peace. You flew to Vegas, right?
We flew to Vegas, we got married, and we came back that night. We spent the night at the Blue Moon Hotel in Vegas. No, actually, we flew back. The Blue Moon is up in Santa Barbara, yeah.
The Blue Moon Motel.
That's right, the Blue Moon Motel.
All right, so what did you tell them to get?
So he tells me that when I marry his sister, he said, you know, I haven't been able to make you out. I said, what are you talking about, Ray? He said, I can't figure you, but you're some kind of a real exotic guy. And I said, what does that mean? He said, I said, are you calling me a pervert? Just the question you asked.
Yeah.
He said, no. He said, I'm saying that you're worse. He said, you going after my sister, and there's a 30-year age difference. Okay, I was 48 when I married her, and she's now 28, so we've been married 10 years. And he said I was real exotic. He said there was something about me that was exotic and libertine and this guy. He's using all these big words. And I said,
well, you're a school teacher. What do you mean big words?
Yes, I am a school teacher, Phil, but no one knows what libertine means. No one I know knows what libertine means.
Isn't that someone who was sexually liberal? Isn't that what they used to call him in the 18th century?
Oh, well, excuse me. I didn't know that I was talking to, one of the well-read historians. I didn't know I had on Will and Ariel Durant here. God.
Well, you know something? You're the teacher, man. You ought to know these things.
I don't know what that means. You know something, Phil? Just because I've seen King Kong doesn't mean I know what to do with a monkey. If the thing was to ever get out of its cage and start rampaging through the streets of New York, just because I've seen King Kong doesn't mean that you see what I'm saying? Just because I've seen King Kong doesn't mean I'm going to stop riding an elevated train. So what I'm trying to...
Whatever that means, I have no idea what that...
What I'm saying is, think about it. Just because I've seen King Kong doesn't mean I'm not going to ride an elevated train.
I don't know what that means.
You don't know what that means?
No, I don't know what that means.
What happened? Did you see King Kong?
Yes, I saw King Kong.
What happened to the elevated train?
King Kong attacked it and destroyed it.
Okay, just because I've seen King Kong don't mean I ain't gonna ride no elevated train.
So just because you have seen something bad doesn't mean you won't still forge ahead.
Oh, boy. Oh, God.
Well, what are you trying to say?
I said...
Don't forget it, man. I don't want to hear about it.
You said just because you've seen King Kong...
Never mind. I don't want anybody explaining it to me. Do you understand? Nobody. What I did hear you say is this. The brother of your wife was scared. The family was scared. They wanted advice on how to get an earthquake kit put together. I imagine by now they've gotten better advice because there's no shortage of advice when it comes to that kind of thing. But you thought you'd have some fun, huh?
I thought I would. No. I was not trying to toy with him.
All right. Well, you weren't trying to toy with him. What you wanted to do, though, is have this guy put together an earthquake kit that was completely wrong so he would look stupid in front of people.
Yes. That's what I wanted. Yes. And I don't know if it worked. I don't know if anybody said to him today would be the day he would have gone out to get the masking tape and all the things I said. I don't know if anyone... I've been waiting by the phone... And you wanted to have me on the show, so I've had to, take this. But Amber's in the other room on the other line waiting for the call.
And what call?
Waiting for the call from somebody from her family to say that Ray went out and got a jacked-up earthquake kit.
Is this the kicks that you're getting today?
Yes, exactly. You don't understand, Phil. When you've got a whole family against you and you love a woman and you want to marry a woman and the whole family thinks you're some kind of an exotic freak, like you're into some... When he said exotic and I started thinking about it, I thought, I'll bet you I know what he means. He thinks I dress up like a girl. Or he thinks I dress up in women's, you know, not like totally, but I probably wear a woman's underpant, and.
Okay, so therefore, what?
He thinks I'm like a guy that likes to wear the underpant.
The underpant. Okay, so meaning he thinks you're some weird ass, not a gay guy, not a pervert.
No, just some exotic weird ass, like you were saying. So when I got to thinking about that, it's been 10 years, too, since he said that to me. And we have had good relations, and we have talked like men. But I have plotted, and I have planned, and I have done the things that I need to do to finally get to where I need to be so that I could one day give it on back to him in spades. And this earthquake offered me that opportunity.
So the big thing was because he humiliated you.
No, it's not the big thing, Phil. Please don't minimize it.
No, I'm not. But because he humiliated you with regard to your sister. And I want to ask you something. When you married this girl, you were 48. She was 18.
Correct.
Now, you understand that there are people, and I'm not saying that they're right or wrong, but I'm just, as we like to say on the show, you have to negotiate your way through life. So you have to speak the language.
I know there are people that think that's weird. I know there are people that thought I was a pervert. I know there were people that thought I was robbing the cradle, and they thought that I'd had sex with her when she was a student. And none of that happened, okay?
Oh, no, I know that. But it also is very unusual for a girl to walk off the stage as a senior, get into the car of a man, and go off and marry him, having never been intimate with him. Can you imagine the fear that that family had?
That's what escapes me. I don't understand that. I told them everything was good. And
you wind up parked in front of a motel. I mean, the whole thing is going to freak him out.
Well, it freaked him out a little too much. And the reason, and that's why I said to Ray, here's what you do, okay? And I knew that my time had come. When he called me up and said that...
No, but do you understand what I'm saying? That this would scare them and that's a big age difference. And, you know, I realize you're now 10 years married.
That's exactly right, 10 years married. So when Ray called me up and said, I'm scared, the family's scared, can you give me help with an earthquake kit? Man, I knew that a warm feeling came over me, like, thank you, God, the time has arrived. And I said, Ray, I want you to sit down and write this stuff down, and that's what I did. I told him, you get 2 shower caps, get Tabasco sauce, get a ceiling fan. I must have had him go out and get $1,000 worth of just junk.
So...
It's funny. It's really funny. And the thing that pisses me off, excuse my language, is that I'm on the phone with you. Amber's on the other line waiting for the call to come in.
Now, you're expecting a call to come in from her family saying what?
They're going to call up, and they're going to say, you ass, you made an ass out of Ray. You made a hopping ass out of him. He was running around town buying ceiling fans and turtle wax. I mean, I'm laughing my ass off, and I can't wait. And, you know... As a matter of fact...
Well, do you want to find out?
Yeah, hold on. Amber, honey, have they called? Well, what's the story with them? Well, I don't understand. Get them to call. Call them up and find out. See, call up and ask them, hey, is Ray there? And find out. It's what? It's 2:45 back there in the morning now. Shoot.
You know what? You're just going to have to wait till tomorrow. I mean, you don't want to make it seem like you're eager, you know?
Well, I know what they're doing. He's holding back. He went out. He got a whole earthquake kit full of all this stuff. Rubber gloves, you know, a car muffler. I sent him on a wild goose chase, you know, raid, ant killer. And he's got about $1,000 worth of garbage sitting. It's beautiful, I got to tell you. He called? He ain't called yet. So I know what they're doing. They're sitting back there pissed off, and he doesn't want to acknowledge the fact that I made a chimpanzee out of him. I mean, I put that boy into chimpware. And now what do you think he's going to do?
Well, I guess he's not going to call up and admit it.
You better believe it. That's the last thing he's going to do. That's why I said, just because I've seen King Kong doesn't mean I ain't going to get on the A-train. If I want to go uptown, I'm going uptown, and King Kong ain't going to stop me. And I put that brother-in-law of hers, I put him into a 3-piece chimp suit.
All right, hang on, okay?
Yeah, you bet.
877-876-PHIL. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So Vernon put Amber's brother, his brother-in-law, put him in a three-piece chimp suit. All right, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. The Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
I knew him very well.
You did?
I did.
We have Vernon Dozier on the line with us here, our number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're also online at philhendryshow.com. And we're talking to Vernon about the earthquake in Virginia. How many members of, where is she from? She's from Alexandria?
Amber came out here with her father and her mother when she was very young, and her father's an engineer and has worked over at Lockheed, and he's worked a lot of places, and she and the family, the rest of the family's in Virginia, Alexandria, Virginia.
Okay. So you marry her, and they are bent out of shape. What about the parents?
Well, her father was the one who accosted me. I was working at, you know, I had just come from a game, and I was on my way to Subway. I went into Subway, and I got a tuna and with the pepperoncinis. I don't know if you ever get the Subway, Phil?
Yes, I do.
Okay. You know, they've got a wonderful tuna. I really love the tuna. And I got a 6-inch tuna, okay. And I walked out, and her father was between automobiles. I didn't know this, but this guy is, what do you call when they do it to a woman?
When they do it to a woman.
Stalking me.
He was stalking you?
Yeah, he was waiting for me to come out. And he pushes me and says, what are you doing, you know, with my daughter? I said, I'm not doing a thing with your daughter. Not a thing. He said, well, what are the two of you got cooked up? He says, what do you got cooked up for after graduation? I said, that's for me to know and you to find out. That's when he pushed me again. And this sandwich, which I had looked very much forward to, and again, you've never had the tuna at Subway, because if you haven't, I suggest very, very earnestly that you have the tuna 6-inch. Okay, not the 12-inch, but the 6-inch, because the flavor is more, it's more in it. I don't know how you say it, you know, and they don't use a lot of mayo.
And okay, that's great. So the father, I'm more interested in the father pushing you.
Yeah, he pushed me. He says, what do you got cooked up for after graduation? Because I called the Blue Moon Hotel, he says, and they've got you down for a weekend honeymoon suite package, and he says to me, and what do you mean the honeymoon suite package? Because that Blue Moon Motel is a dump. And I said, boy, you better smile when you say that. I said, because a friend of mine owns it. He says, well, it's a dump. I said, it's got, and I shouldn't have said, I said, but they do have that vibrating bed and everything like that. And
oh, boy, you really know how to endear yourself to the father of an 18-year-old girl that you're about to marry.
Hey, wait, well, hold the line here, Phil. I never laid a hand on that girl. I come out, and I didn't do anything to this guy. He pushes me twice. The second time, I can't. See, you won't.
What am I not hearing?
It was a 6-inch tuna.
What's the thing with the 6-inch tuna?
It's the best. Boy, you got to know. You sure don't know your sandwiches, do you? A 6-inch Subway tuna is the best.
What difference does it make if it's a 6-inch Subway tuna? Are you telling me that this really pissed you off?
Yes, it pissed me off. He's talking to me about it. Yes, I'm interested in his daughter, and yes, 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 yes. I'll give you it all. I'll give you every yes you want to hear. All right? Okay?
I'm not asking for anything but the truth.
All right, I'm giving you the truth. But the thing that bothered me more than anything else, and I said to him, I said, okay, right there. Now, mister, you owe me for a 6-inch Subway. And I said it to him, and boy, he didn't forget it.
Well, if you said it to him the way you're saying it to me now, yeah, he must have been really scared.
Okay, I'm a little bit. Let me tell you something. I said to him, "You owe me for."
Were you scared? You were scared of this guy.
Was I scared of him? No, Phil. I was scared of him. Yes, a little bit. He's a wrestler. All right. The guy had been a wrestler in college, and he had wrestled Wahoo McDaniel. I knew a little bit about him.
Who?
Wahoo McDaniel. Wow, you don't even know who he is. Wahoo McDaniel played linebacker for the New York Jets, and they went on to become a professional, famous wrestler. Now, Wahoo McDaniel and this man, Amber's father, whose last name I won't give and whose first name I won't give by court order, I'm not allowed to.
And so there was some litigation around all this stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But he wrestled with, and he tag-teamed with Wahoo McDaniel and wrestled against him.
Well, I don't know what this was. Is it the 60s? Or
Yeah, 60s and 70s, yeah. Right over here at the Olympic Auditorium. Okay, with
Bobo Brazil and those guys?
Exactly.
Okay, so you were afraid of this guy.
Well, no, I wasn't. I said, no, I was not afraid of him. He pushed me, and the 6-inch tuna hits the deck. It hits the asphalt. And he says to me, and get a load of this guy. He thinks he's being funny. He says, 3-second rule. I said, are you trying to be funny? He said, I'm dead serious. 3-second rule. Pick it up. So he picked it up instead. And he wipes it on his pants and hands it to me. And he wiped it on the groin area. Okay? So,
well, all right. This sounds like a couple of grown men acting like children in the middle of a parking lot.
Wait. I'm not the one that picked up the sandwich and rubbed it on my crotch. He did.
That's fine. He did. You have an inability to understand the human race here, okay?
I do.
Yes. You've got an 18-year-old girl. This is this man's daughter. He doesn't know what the hell's going on. He hears that she's going to marry you when she graduates. He sees that you've got some reservation for the Blue Moon Motel. And then you're coming out of this sandwich shop. The guy's emotional. You could have handled this a lot better, you know?
What am I supposed to do?
Well, don't start, you know, that line, that's for me to know and you to find out.
He asked me, what have you two got cooked up?
And you said that's for me to know and you to find out. Naturally, he's going to push you. He's already pissed off and scared. Now your stupid tuna sandwich hits the deck.
Whoa, hold the phone, pal. Boy, you sure don't know your tuna sandwiches. Because
I don't care if I know my tuna sandwich. Are you nuts or something? Who cares about that? All right, so your tuna sandwich hits the deck.
All right, so he picks it up and he says, it's 3-second rule, and I said, whatever. I mean, the tuna's laying right on the asphalt, where for all I know, it looked like there had been an infant or a minor child of some that had it looked as if there was spit up. It went right into the spit up. And this guy picks it up, says 3-second rule, and wipes it off right in his crotch.
You know, Vernon, I've never heard you get so weepy and teary-eyed.
I'm not weepy and teary-eyed.
Well, you're all, wipes it off right in his crotch. I can't understand how you can't see that this man would be upset.
Of course he's upset.
Then why would you say that's for me to know and you to find out?
Because that was the guy. We weren't going to tell nobody until afterwards. We was going to elope.
We weren't going to tell nobody until afterwards. We was going to elope. And you're a teacher.
I'm nervous, Phil. The guy rubbed on his crutch. I understand.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here from the El Pacifico every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we take you places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. We make truth your bitch. Nothing personal, but we do. We are here at the El Pacifico. This is where we broadcast from. Where is that? The land of fog and sea lions here on the, just a little bit north of Los Angeles. We're on the Ventura, L.A. County line. We have our own studio here. We have our own, we got our own everything. We are, you know, in the post-Art Bell era, man. We're not off the grid, but...
Damn close.
Pretty close. And Art, wherever you are, God bless you, man. God, I was just looking at some of the comments that, you know, Kevin Pollak and I were talking about Art Bell and the genius that he is, and he is, and what he was able to accomplish. So wherever you are, man, that's where you need to be, because you know what you're doing, man. All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. A teacher gets canned because of his past in gay porn. That seems a little rough. Can people make mistakes? Are we allowed to screw up? Do we have to be perfect? In other words, he didn't murder anybody. He didn't molest a child. I understand that some crimes you can never forgive, at least not forgive and allow the person into certain areas of life. I think molesting children, I think you have to pretty much keep an eye on somebody like that. I think people that have, there's all kinds of offenses that we can talk about, but are we allowed to be people? Is being a human being, that's no good anymore, is that it? We can't be human beings. We can't, see, we're all squeaky clean, bull crap. Oh, yeah. Presidents, Congress people, everybody that's in the public eye has got to be a cut above. They got to be Superman. They got to be Superwoman. They got to be something that nobody else on earth is. We want to see if they can run a gauntlet that's absolutely impossible, completely unfair. We want to see if they can survive being lied about. We want to see if they can survive being maligned. We want to see if they can survive rumor and innuendo. We want to see if they can survive the shifting and very flimsy morality and ethics of this society. We want to see if they can make it past all of that, well, then hell. We'll let them be a teacher. And you know something? Isn't that just a lucky day in someone's life when they get to be an American teacher? Don't make any money. Every brain surgeon in the world, meaning not too bright, on your back telling you how to do your job. Every bigot, every moron, every crack-addicted mother, every absentee father, they all got an opinion about how you're supposed to do this, that, or something else. And they won't make sure that you're teaching their kid right. Meanwhile, they wouldn't know what 2 + 2 was, man, if you spelled out 4 for them. So here's a guy that gets canned because he had been in gay porn. What does that mean? Well, to many people, it means he's some kind of a pervert. He must like little boys. He must have something special for kids. As opposed to straight porn, that's the good kind of porn. That's the kind of porn where, you know, you're only sinning as an adult, but there isn't any possibility that you may like kids. And, you know, we could continue this discussion. You know pretty much what I'm saying here. There's nothing is adding up here, people. We need teachers, man, don't we?
Yeah, I'd say we do.
Robert?
Yeah, we need teachers. We need good teachers.
Yes, we need good teachers. So if somebody is not a good teacher because they were in gay porn, then you've lost me, you know. I don't want to have anything to do with the system then. If that is the system... Now, I know they say to you, you should stick around and fight the system, Phil. Yeah, sure. Right.
But why don't you want to fight the system?
Let me tell you about fighting the system. First of all, you fight it alone. Second of all, there's nobody's going to thank you for it. Third of all, your chances of winning are slim to none. Second of all, yes, I understand there are some people that break through and they become, you know, great heroes. They fight the system. They fought City Hall. They did it. But that is a very, very rare thing. You stick your neck out for somebody, you wind up getting your head cut off. That is the reality of life. That's why we are, you know, impressed with the heroes, because heroes are people that go out and do it despite all of those threats. And heroes don't come along every day. They don't come along every lifetime. They're few and far between. People with guts, we may think that they're out there in abundance. No, they ain't. So who's going to stand up for this guy? Well, we'll find out. We also have a story here about a Missouri teacher suing over the Facebook law. She can't even contact her own child on Facebook. Well, how were you talking to your kid before there was Facebook? Match.com settles a suit with a pledge to screen out sex offenders. Good idea. And here's one that I thought I'd start the hour with. It's not really all that unusual, but it is nonetheless a fascinating story when it happens. A freshman Republican lawmaker resigned because his wife sent an offensive and racist email to the Democratic State Senate campaign of 9-time Olympic gold medalist Carl Lewis, a GOP official acknowledged on Monday. Pat Delaney has stepped down from the state assembly this month and said he won't seek a full term in November because of his wife's missive to Lewis's campaign, Burlington County Republican Chairman Bill Layton said. Delaney originally cited an unspecified family issue as the reason, but now we find out that his wife sent a email to Carl Lewis. If you remember Carl Lewis, he was a gold medal winner, multiple gold medals in the 84 Olympics. He's a political novice who is among one of the greatest athletes of all time. He is a black man. Delaney's wife, Jennifer, is white. Her email said in part, imagine having dark skin and name recognition and the nerve to think that equaled knowing something about politics. Let me repeat this, and you can roll it around in your mind. Imagine having dark skin and name recognition and the nerve to think that equaled knowing something about politics. Now, I know this idiot, this Jennifer Delaney who sent this, I don't know her, but I know what she was thinking. What she was thinking and what she should have said, and again, I'm not saying the woman isn't a racist, but in her mind, what she was saying is the following thing. Imagine being a celebrity and that equaling knowledge about politics. That's what she should have said.
Yeah, but she said a black skin, that means she racist.
Yeah. If you, what are you trying to forgive it for, man? She said a black skin.
I'm not trying to forgive it. What I'm saying, I'm always fascinated by whites, especially, who say stupid stuff like this. Well, I never meant that wasn't racist. What I meant to say, well, what you meant to say, listen, stupid, you better articulate very clearly what it was you meant to say. And what she meant to say, if she had any kind of brain power, was that celebrity. But what she did was she broke down the celebrity to skin color and to name recognition, which in and of itself, I suppose, is celebrity. Not really celebrity, because you'd have name recognition if you're a serial murderer. So name recognition, meaning you're well-known, you could be infamous or famous, and your skin is black. So she probably today, you know, and I know what you're saying, Robert.
No, you don't know what I'm saying. That woman, if she meant to say celebrity, she would have said celebrity. She didn't say that. She said name recognition and black skin. She's talking about being a black man, and there's nothing different about that.
Well, all right. Look, I'm not going to disagree with you, but there's a certain kind of stupidity at work in people like this. There's a certain, and I've been around it my whole life. The stupidity is along the lines of, I meant to say something, why don't you people see what it was that I meant to say?
Well, then she should have said what she meant to say.
Well, you're right. I'm not denying that.
Yeah, but are you saying she ain't a racism?
What do you mean racism, man? You mean racist?
Yeah, you saying she's not racist?
No, I'm not saying she's not racist either. I'm saying, in fact, she is racist. See, it's not about whether they're racist or not. You guys don't get this. It's not about whether they're racist or not. There's all kinds of racists. But if you want to be in public office, if you want your husband to be in public office, you can't betray that. Now, maybe she doesn't even know she's racist. But even still, if you're any kind of a brain surgeon, you got to be, if you're running for public office, you want to be in politics, then you have to know how to communicate. You got to know how to communicate in such a way that it gets through to people in a positive way. And if you're dumb, you don't know how to do that, then it comes out sloppy. You can be a racist. You may think that Carl Lewis is not equal to anybody that he may run against because he's black. But do you want to get elected? Would you want to get elected?
Yeah, I want to get elected.
All right, then the first thing you don't want to do is let people know you're a racist. Do you?
Yeah, but if that's what racism is, your philosophy.
Well, all right, then. If you're a racist and you expect to get elected to any office of significance in the United States of America, you're an imbecile. You know, do yourself a favor, man, and just take up something else. Knitting, I don't know what, macrame, go out for, you know, the volleyball team, something, because you're in the wrong line of work, Jack. If you think you're going to get elected to public office in America as a full-bore admitted racist and you're going to have any kind of run of significance in politics, give it up. It ain't going to happen. Not now. This idiot sends this guy an email. And it has all of the racial tinge to it, but I sincerely believe that she could have gotten away with it if she'd said that you think celebrity equals knowledge in politics.
Yeah, well, you're saying that. You're putting words in her mouth.
Well, maybe. Layton said Pat Delaney decided to leave office to shield his three children from a hurtful and embarrassing public spectacle involving their dumbass mother. No, he didn't say that, but almost. Former Assemblyman Pat Delaney's wife inexplicably sent an offensive and racist email in response to a routine email from Carl Lewis's campaign. Her actions were inexcusable, Layton said. Delaney said in a statement that he and his wife don't share the same racial views. He said he was sorry. Boy, are they're just hanging her out to dry, man. On behalf of my family, we sincerely apologize to Mr. Lewis for any pain this caused him. Neither the Delaney's nor Lewis could be reached for comment. Lewis is running for state senate in New Jersey's 8th legislative district. Delaney was part of the opposing GOP assembly slate in that district.
And didn't that the lady said something?
No, she doesn't. She's not quoted, but I'll tell you, they hung her ass out to dry, Jack. All right, coming up, Jeff Dowder and David G. Hall may stop by, plus a teacher who starred in gay porn gets canned. He reached out to the ACLU, but did they help him? PhilHenryShow.com is our website. This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. I'll be right back.
Radio for Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
World famous Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL. Jeff Dowder is joining us from Hermosa Beach, where I think you guys have just finished up at Mr. Pooh's, right, Jeff, your band?
Couple of sets tonight, so and went pretty good. A lot better than we expected. We had Led Zeppelin, which is a tribute band, and we usually have three bands tonight. But I wanted to also mention
Who is the band Led Zeppelin?
Yeah, Led Zeppelin's like a tribute. Well, it's not really a tribute band. It's more of a band that they do metal. They do some Zeppelin songs, but mostly they'll do their own material. So that was opening band tonight. They did a set. We did another set. We just finished up.
So this is the anniversary, is it not, of the birth, or yesterday was, of Keith Moon?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Or, I mean, yeah, I am. Or no, it's not. No, it's not today.
I mean, yesterday.
Yes, it was yesterday. That was Keith Moon's birthday, right?
And you're a drummer, and tell me about the significance of Keith Moon's birthday.
Well, I mean, it's the significance of Keith Moon's of life. You know, he was a very energetic drummer. He was very theatrical, but a lot of people overlook the fact that he had a great control of the instrument. He was a great drummer. I mean, he had an incredible. Kept time and, you know, everything like you're supposed to do. Also was able to use, he was a drummer that, even though the Who only had one bass drum, he was equally comfortable with two bass drums for both feet, you know.
Now, tell people who are not familiar with drumming, the bass drum is the big round drum in the front.
Yeah, it's generally the drum that you see. It's generally the drum that, in fact, in the Who, that was, they had the name of the band on the bass drum.
And Keith Moon would sometimes use two, huh?
Yeah, he, what we used to call, you know, guys use one bass drum, call them a one-legged band. Keith Moon could use both. I mean, Ginger Baker could use both. There's a few drummers that was that good, you know.
How many do you use?
Well, I mean, that's not fair. I mean, I only use one. I mean, I feel that I am a good drummer, but I'm not no, you know, Keith Moon or anything like that.
So what, when we talk about drummers, who do you think are the better drummers? Rock drummers, jazz drummers?
Well, I mean, you can't really say. It depends on a drummer. In jazz, there's been many great drummers, you know. Buddy Rich was a great drummer. Elvin Jones, a great drummer. But, I mean, in rock, too, you know. So it depends on the person, you know. It's not really the genre. I'll give you an example of what made Keith Moon special. Keith Moon could do, like, this is called a triplicate. And what I use is, I use a drum pad, Phil, so you can hear it better on the phone.
Okay.
And I'm going to put the phone down now. You can hear, this is my drum pad here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you good. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, this is a triplicate, basic Keith Moon, and this is a song that we do from Dark Horse called it's an old song. Was Judgment at Sunrise, Judgment at Sunrise, The Parting, and then Judgment at Sunrise, The Party. And
hold on for a minute. What are these?
Oh, that was the three-part. That was the rock opera that we did on our first on the first, it's not a rock opera or nothing, but we did three part Judgment Sunrise, The Party, and Judgment Sunrise Party.
And I can't understand you, Jeff. Judgment at Sunrise.
Judgment at Sunrise.
And then what?
Judgment at Sunrise, the Parting.
Judgment at Sunrise, The Parting.
Yeah, and then Judgment at Sunrise, The Party.
Judgment at Sunrise, The Party. So these were the three...
Yeah, these are three parts of a longer piece, you know, of a longer rock epic. You know, because we don't do no rock operas. The Who did rock operas, if you want to talk about a rock opera. The Who done a rock opera when they did Quadrophenia and they did Tommy and like that. We do rock epics. And here's an example of the rock epic at Judgment Sunrise. One, two. Okay, what you just, can you hear that?
Not really, man. I mean,
All right, hold on. I got to get some heavier sticks. Hey, Boney, give me the heavier stick. Yeah, I'm on the radio right now. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to get a heavier stick. Move that out of there. Get that out of here. Okay, here you go. Okay, this is Judgment Sunrise. These are the triplicates. One, two, three. Hey, did you see that? Or I don't know if you saw that. Not saw it, but did you hear that?
I can't hear. You're going to have to do that a little bit louder for me, okay? Because, first of all, I apologize to our people watching Phil TV. We had it on Wahoo McDaniel.
You did what?
Never mind, okay? Do it again.
What do you want me to do? Judgment, Sunrise, The Party?
I don't know the difference between these things. Just do the... What was it? You called it a triplicate?
Yeah, this is a triplicate. Here it is. One, two, three. And then 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, it's difficult to do on the phone.
You're using a drum pad. Is that the problem? It sounds to me like you're not, I don't hear,
You're having a hard time hearing it.
Sort of, yeah.
All right, let me try one more time. Give me the heavier sticks, Biff. Give me the heavier stick, yeah, okay. All right, here we go, Phil. This is Judgment Sunrise, The Parting, She-Wolf. And it goes like this, so you know the song goes, and we're going to go down to the Judgment at Sunrise. And everybody's going to meet at the beach. All right, now what that was a very, very classic, heavy, you know, rock, heavy, okay?
You sound tired, and I have to tell you, it sounds like you're playing drums with...
What?
It sounds like you're playing drums with pencils or something, man.
Okay, man.
No, I'm sorry.
There's no reason to do that. You know, I happen to be an experienced drummer, and I think it is,
No, I'm not dissing your drumming. I'm hearing... What are you playing with?
They're very light sticks, okay? They're very light sticks. They're only the size... They're about the size of a chopstick, and you use those... in some areas of the rock opera, or not the rock opera, I mean the rock epic, like in Judgment Sunrise, The Parting, when the She-Wolf arrives.
Look, I don't know about the She-Wolf. I got a break. I thank you very much, Jeff.
Well, that's a jip, man, because I was going to say...
877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Well, that's a jip, man.
For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. So, you know, if you don't, and we were a little confused, to be honest with you. I thought that the new Freedom Tower, One World Trade Center, the new tower that is being built that will eventually be the tallest building in the United States and among one of the tallest in the world, was close to completion. It won't be done until February of 2013, so that's just a little more, it's a year and a half away. All right, so when we have the memorial there at Ground Zero, which I guess we should no longer call it Ground Zero, at the at One World Trade Center. It will be a memorial at a building that is not fully completed. Now that brings me to one of the memorials that's been important. You know, it's really funny about this. When I talk about 9/11, I talk about the memorial sites, and I talk about, you know, how strong I feel about this. It pisses some people off, and it really, that pisses me off, you know? There's an escalation of pissed offness, you know?
Right.
Well, I can't even imagine people, these small-minded mothers out there who get, you know, bugged if I talk about 9/11. You know, I just, anyway, I've had people saying things like, you know, people die. People die. When that guy said that to me, I could have freaking knocked his head off his shoulders. People die? So in other words, we should just have an acceptable level of terrorist killings in our country, and we'll just sit there and suck on that because people die. How about your mama dying, okay? How about that? Boy, did that bother me. So I had to kill him. Now then.
You're kidding, right?
No, I'm not kidding, bud. I did. I killed a man with my bare hands. Yes, I'm kidding, okay?
Wow, man. You believe that?
I don't know.
Anyway, the memorial that I'm very interested in is the Shanksville Memorial, the Flight 93 Memorial. What is done? What isn't done? What's it going to look like? What doesn't it look like? What the hell? You know, I know that they have solicited for donations to complete it. A common field one day, a field of honor forever. On Tuesday morning, September 11, 2001. Okay, so we know the history of Flight 93. Now, on September the 11th, the weekend, the dedication and commemoration, the National Park Service invites you to become a part of a historic weekend dedicating Phase 1 of the permanent memorial and commemoration of the 10th anniversary of September the 11th. Check back for updates. Okay. The dedication and commemoration will be filled with many ways to honor the story of Flight 93, the dedication of the memorial on Saturday, September the 10th, and the 10th anniversary commemoration on Sunday, September the 11th, will be the focal points of the weekend. In addition, events will be spread over the entire weekend. Follow the links below for more detailed information. Where am I? I am on www.nps.gov/whatever, man.
/whatever, man.
It's the thing for the September 11th Shanksville Memorial. There's general information. There's a September 10th memorial dedication. There's a September 11th anniversary. There's group visits, media, and all that. Flight 93 National Memorial will be closed to the public on the morning of Monday, September the 12th, and will reopen at 2 p.m. So this is the first phase. And they have on this page some, I would love to, you know what we'll do is we'll put it up on Phil TV and HD here in just a second. What happened to the mouse pad, bud?
I don't know.
Find it, okay?
What are you doing with that, man?
Where's the mouse pad?
I don't know.
Then get it. You know, I got stuff I got to do here, Jack. Oh, here it is. What are you doing, man? We're gonna flip it over during our next break, guys, and we'll give you some good pictures there of the memorial. Now, what's the latest controversy? Well, the latest controversy, I thought it actually bothered me, and then I realized, wait a second, this is a part of the traditional observance of 9/11. Now, listen, religious leaders are calling on Mayor Michael Bloomberg to reverse course and offer clergy a role in the ceremony commemorating the 10th anniversary of the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center. Rudy Washington, the deputy mayor and former mayor Rudy Giuliani's administration, says he's outraged. This is America, and to have a memorial service where there's no prayer, this appears to be insanity to me, said Mr. Washington, who has suffered severe medical problems connected to the time he spent at Ground Zero. I feel like America has lost its way. Now, wait just a second, sir. According to our research, unless we are completely, you know, wrong, there haven't been clergy at the previous memorials. I don't think that there was clergy. I was at one of them. I actually was at the first anniversary. I was in New York on September the 11th, 2002. I remember a reading of the victims' names. I remember all of the members of law enforcement that showed up from just about every part of not only our country, but there were a lot of police officers from England. We saw police officers from France. We saw firefighters from all over the country. We saw, and of course, thousands and thousands of people. It was one of the most moving things I ever saw in my life. In fact, I think I told you guys this, but we were in a hotel on Times Square, and it was the morning of the 11th, and we were there. We were going to broadcast from a series of studios at the Embassy Suites that had been set up by ABC. And that morning, as I lay in bed, I thought that there was some kind of a hissing sound coming from the air conditioner. And then I thought it was some kind of sounded like bells. Until I realized, wait a second, what I'm hearing bagpipes. So I got up, and it was 5:30 in the morning. It was still dark. And I got up, and I opened the windows that looked out onto Times Square, and I saw coming down Broadway the lights on the police cruisers lighting up the street. There must have been 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 radio cars, police cars, fire trucks. And I saw in front of them the marching bagpipe players of the New York Police Department. The NYPD's, one of their divisions, one of the precincts, had bagpipe players leading this group of bagpipe players and firefighters. There were the New York City firefighters. Then there were firefighters from around the country. And then trailing behind, suddenly, were just people like you and me, who started out with them way uptown. I don't know where they were, coming all the way, heading downtown, heading to Midtown and heading downtown. They began to draw pedestrians and just regular people behind them until by the time they got to Times Square, there was a crowd of thousands following behind these bagpipe players and these fire trucks and these firemen. And when they and I remember running, grabbing my camera and running downstairs. And as they I just got there just in time, man, as the bagpipe players were passing by and the firefighters were there. I remember seeing a bunch of firefighters standing on the sidewalk a little confused as to what they were going to do, because I guess they were somewhere in Times Square at a hotel, and they got into their uniforms. They came down there. They kind of looked one way, looked the other, and just said, the hell with it. And they just went right into the ranks of the firefighters and started walking with them. And I got some pictures and followed them, I don't know, 2-3 blocks down the street. And then, you know, went back up, got Maria, because we weren't planning on going down to the, in those days, they called it the pile. They alternately called it the pile, the hole. There were a lot of things they called it. By the time I saw it 6 weeks after the plane struck, it was the pile. And then a year later, it was the hole. So we went down at about 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, I think. And we stood there, and it was amazing. It was amazing. There was a crowd of people there. And right next to me were these sawhorses. And then down the middle of this crowd of us, and then crossing the street to get to Ground Zero, were the relatives. And I'll never forget this, because they asked them, they said, now, if you're a relative, hold up your arm so we can see your armband. We can see your armband. If you're one of the relatives, hold it up. And this one woman who was carrying the picture of a younger woman with her was so bereaved that her daughter or whoever was with her had to lift her arm up for her and say she's a family. She could barely raise her arm. And they all went in a little line into the pit. And that's where it began. They started to read the names of all of the people, the victims. It was a celebration of our country that if you grew up during the time of Vietnam like I did, when there was hatred for America, when the flag was burned and spit on all the time, and I was a part of that generation, you know, I was a part of that generation. And I got older, and I got smarter, or dumber, or whatever you want to call it. But people change, you know. People do change. What is life unless you can take in new things and say, oh, wow, that's interesting. I think I'll think differently about it now. You live your whole life so rigidly that you only think one thing. What a wasted life. But you can't learn anything, and you can't change, and you can't open up, and you can't say, I was wrong then, I'm right now. I was right then, maybe I'm wrong now. You can't be that honest with yourself. You're wasting your life. You may think that you got it over on people, and you may think you're having yourself, you're so lucky to be right all the time. You're wasting your life. At the end of your life, you're going to wonder what happened. Where did it go? Why didn't I open up and look at some other ways of doing things? So I was a part of that generation, and I remember the country losing its way in the 70s. It was not anything that was considered cool to love your country. It wasn't considered cool to fly the flag. It wasn't considered cool to be an American, you know? And somewhere along the line, we got it back. We still have these people who think that they're original thinkers, and they're not. They're vestiges of a time that is 40 years old, who think that America's this, America's that, America's something else. Only Americans have the luxury, and the stupidity, by the way, to think that their country is something less than it is. Only Americans indulge in the luxury of sitting on their thumb and talking about how, you know, how messed up it is, and if only we did things the way the British or the French or somebody else. You haven't got a freaking clue.
Yeah, you know what you're talking about, though.
I don't know what I'm talking. I know what I believe, okay?
Yeah, but how do you know the British don't know better about, like, healthcare and everything like that?
Okay, let's talk about that, bud. Do the British know more about healthcare, or do they know more about providing healthcare?
What's that mean?
In other words, do they have better healthcare there, or do they just provide more healthcare for more people?
Yeah, that's a good question, man. I'd say they provide more healthcare, but I don't think they got better doctors.
Exactly. The medical attention and the medical people, the treatment you get in America is the best in the world. Now, are we bad at giving it to everybody? Yeah. But guess what? When it comes to the doctors and the nurses and just the facilities, this is the best.
Well, so what? If a guy dies, you're going to have to crawl to the emergency room.
Okay, so what are you saying? America sucks?
No, I'm not saying America sucks. We just want something that we do better.
What?
Something that they do better than us.
They don't do nothing better than us, other than dole out crappy health care to everybody.
That means everybody gets the same crappy health care.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, we'll be back here in the world-famous Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL is the number. Don't forget our website and, of course, our merchandise store. We have the ball caps. We've got a brand-new Phil Henry Show ball cap that is going to be in our store this week. Nobody has the ball cap, and this has got the Phil Henry Show insignia right there, front and center. So you got to get this with a brass buckle. It's a beautiful thing, man. It's in our merchandise store at philhenryshow.com. Coming up, a former gay porn star loses his gig as a teacher. Is it fair? We'll get into it on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio for Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
So there's this teacher. His name's Sean Loftus. He was in the gay porn business. He was an actor. And he was also a teacher. Or I don't know if he was a teacher. He's a teacher now. Let me just read the story. One of CNN's most popular citizen reporters was fired from his substitute teaching job after school officials unearthed evidence he used to be a gay porn star. Okay. Sean Loftus ditched his porn career in the spring of 2010 to focus on teaching, but he's still widely known by his X-rated alias, according to the Miami New Times. His hardcore performance won him several awards. Wikipedia lists his porn accolades and some of the videos he's appeared in. A printout page was included in a memo that Alan Bernstein, Florida middle school principal, sent to Loftus, called him down to the office to discuss his noncompliance. I don't see yet, and I'm asking my producer, where did he noncomply? He had a porn career. He no longer has the... Is that what you call a noncompliance? Because he had the porn career. Okay, in other words, there is no site. So if you're telling me there's a website and you can't tell me in the story that you sent me to read on the air where that is, then, you know, it doesn't exist as far as I'm concerned. A printout of the page was included in a memo that this middle school teacher sent to him, wanted to talk to him. Loftus was suspended. So as far as the Phil Henry Show is concerned, because we haven't got any other information that I was told existed, They have suspended a man from his job because of Wikipedia. And you know about Wikipedia, don't you? You know about the internet. I mean, there are people who are character assassins out there. There are losers out there that want everybody else to be a loser. And so they go around and they post things, and some dumbass like this middle school principal, Alan Bernstein, decides that he's going to bite and fire a man. The guy used to be a porn actor. I understand that. Is that something you want around kids? Probably not, but he's not doing that anymore. He quit to focus on his teaching. So he's suspended from a substitute teaching position in Miami-Dade. And that's that. His teacher certification was revoked despite his insistence that his porn days were over. So it's just a guy who's been fired. And the rest, this is a terrible story. And I don't know what else to tell you. It's just a lousy story. It's not a very well-written story. And, you know, I'm not interested in any other information. I don't give a damn if his DVDs are still out there. I don't give a damn if Wikipedia is still out there. That doesn't... What I'm asking, and it's a very simple question, is that man actively promoting his porn career? Is he out there saying, I'm in the porn industry and I'm making porn movies, or I want you to see my porn movies, or here's a website to go to? The answer is no, apparently. So he was fired because he used to be something. You know... We've got so many great teachers in this country. We've got so many perfect people, in fact, in this country, that we don't need to have a good teacher. Let's just fire him. Okay, that's all I know about the story. It's such a badly written story, and we have such little information on it that I have to just draw that conclusion. What else have we got here before we send off into the sunset our very own Jason Rance? He's going to go over to Cairo Radio, become the assistant program director there. And I wish you the best, man. And you're probably getting a huge raise.
Yeah, no doubt.
Probably. All right, so here is the final piece of garbage that we've got here. Online dating giant Match.com settled a lawsuit Tuesday with a rape victim by committing to perform security background checks on all current and future members. In other words, you got to get raped before these people do anything. By the way, here is another one. Twitter and Facebook have decided they don't really want their sites shut down during riots. Now, here was a question that might have been asked of Twitter and Facebook. I don't know if it was. Do you guys plan on shutting your site down or otherwise monitoring your site for the police? You don't want to do that? Okay. So you guys, what you're going to do, Twitter and Facebook, is you're going to sit back and count your money while a city burns. Is that what you're going to do? I just want to be clear, because the next time it happens, the next time I hear about people burning a city down, and they're using Twitter or Facebook to organize themselves, I'm going to point out the owners and the principals of Twitter and Facebook, their names, how much money they probably made last year, and what they're most likely doing as people use their site to promote a criminal activity. Are they out to dinner with their wives? Are they in Mexico with their girlfriends? Are they sitting around just thumbing through these stacks of hundreds and fifties that they got on their table? We don't know, but we will be sure to let you know. So Match.com decides to do background checks because, like Twitter and like Facebook, well, it never occurred to them that anybody would use their service for illegal purposes. Hollywood screenwriter and author Carol Markin sued the leading internet matchmaker after it linked her up last year with Alan Paul Wurzel of Pacific Palisades, who had at least six previous sexual assault convictions. Wurzel pled, well, they said that you were the perfect match for this guy.
Yeah, but I was going to say, man, maybe she should have married the guy.
Well, I don't know. Did she get attacked?
No, she didn't get attacked.
Wurzel pled no contest to sexual battery last week and oh, I guess he did. Jesus. Markin demanded that Match.com screen members against state and federal sex offender registries. No kidding. Otherwise, you know, world-famous Phil Henry Show produced for the last night by Jason Rance, our technical director, Dan Northcraft, Chris Johnson, Fred Scotty, our associate producers. The very best of luck to Jason Rance at his new position as assistant program director at Cairo in Seattle. And this program here henceforth will be produced by Bud Dickman.
Yay!
Because we can't do better than Jason, we might as well do worse. The Phil Henry Show and PhilHenryShow.com.
Phil Henry.